checking to see if the equipment is working correctly. Too long. I'm in the office of Mr. Richard Hicks at Hillside High School in Durham, North Carolina. Mr. Hicks, I'd like for you to introduce yourself and say that you know that this interview is being recorded.
My name is Richard Hicks, principal at Hillside High School, and I am aware of the recording of this interview.
Well, Mr. Hicks, I wrote to you and I appreciate you answering my questionnaire. I'm doing some research. I'm comparing the roles of black high school principals. I'm interviewing principals from 1964 and 1989. In 1964, there were over 200 black high school principals, and in 89, when I wrote to the State Department, they sent me a listing of 41, and I found that of those 41, some of them principals of alternative schools, and so we have less than 40 black high school principals in the year 89. So you're one of the 89 principals, and I want to ask you some questions and have you respond to them for the research. First thing I want you to tell me is how you became a high school principal.
I was teaching in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, at a junior senior high school, and was beckoned back to Rocky Mount to coach at my former all-black high school. Within 2 years, we had had merged with the white school in integration. For about 3 years, I taught in that integrated situation and became an assistant principal at that merged high school. And I stayed an assistant principal for 2 years, and the third year the superintendent gave me an opportunity to move into a junior high school as a principal, in that he was bringing the principal of that school to his office as director of a title, I think it was Title I or Title II at that time, program. And so I moved into the principalship. I was working on my master's degree in administration at that time, but the superintendent gave me a year to complete my certificate. But after he gave me the job, I completed it in one semester and the summer of that same year.
I see. So you stayed down in Rocky Mount area for...
I stayed in Rocky Mount until the year 1981, and I felt like I needed a change, so I moved to Orange County, where I became principal of Stanford Junior High School. It was a school with about 1,140 pupils, with a population about 77% white, 23% black. I had originally applied for the high school job, which was open in that same system, but after talking to the superintendent, he felt that he should move the young man who was principal at the middle school to the high school, but said that he would be happy to offer me the junior high school, which I took. And I stayed in that junior high school position for 6 years, and Hillside became available when when one of our best principals, black principals that North Carolina has known, Dr. John Lucas, retired. And I was given the opportunity to follow him as principal here at Hillside.
And you've been here at Hillside for the past, what, 5 years?
This is the fifth year.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any educators in your family?
No, I am the first person in my family to go beyond high school, and only my younger brother is a high school graduate. My other three sisters and or brothers, neither of them got beyond the 10th grade.
I want you to tell me something about Hillside High School.
Well, first of all, it has a magnificent faculty. That is the most impressive thing. People who know what they're doing, who are interested in going back to school and finding out new techniques and what have you. Right now, Durham City Schools is getting a lot of publicity as not being up to par as it relates to the mandates of the state. But this staff has put together a very good school improvement plan, and are working feverishly to make sure that it comes about. In the third year of the plan in which the state has mandated, I can guarantee that this faculty will meet its 75% of the indicators of success. As it relates to the students here, we do not have a Caucasian or a person of any other race in this school other than blacks. There are 976 kids here at this time, and they are all black students. However, about 30% of our staff, about 30% of our staff is composed of Caucasian teachers or of another minority. However, we have found that that has in no way deterred the teacher or student's interest in making this one of the best high schools around.
How do you maintain the total black student population?
It's just a matter that I guess it was like it occurred in many cities that Caucasians chose to move from the inner city areas and move to the suburbs. And as they moved to the suburbs, then the county school systems began to build bigger and in some cases better facilities in their high schools. And so what has happened over the last 8 or 9 years is there has been a continuous flow so that those Caucasian families who still live within the school district, their children are grown and have children of their own, and the city and county of Durham have not seen fit over the years to move the city school district line along with the movement of the suburbs. So there are many people who live in the city of Durham but are in the county school district because the school district line has not changed.
Mm-hmm. And you're located near North Carolina Central University.
An excellent place to be, one block away.
Yes, you can just look right over to the campus. Now I'm going to ask you some questions about the responsibilities you have here as principal and how you deal with them. Would you address the supervision of personnel and your teacher selection?
Well, let me take supervision first of all. Mm-hmm. The state gives us a very good guide as to how to supervise teachers. One of the first things that we do when we come to school is in my handbook there is a list of the persons who will evaluate each teacher. I've been fortunate up until this year to have three assistant principals, so we would divide the faculty into four equal groups. I would normally take the non-teaching personnel because I would be aware of their movements and what have you. And then we would simply follow the plan where we would give them one formal observation during the year and several informal observations, have the post-conferences, the pre-conferences, and follow that gamut in terms of supervision. Each teacher is told at that meeting that if there is something on their evaluation with which they want to discuss, they have a right to ask the person to whom I have delegated that responsibility to have me in on the conference. The other thing is that any teacher, once they see the list, if they can request to be observed by their immediate supervisor by law, that being me, if they wish. But that doesn't happen too often once they're assigned. As to the selection of teachers, we have a system here where once the vacancy is defined, the director of personnel will have the supervisor at central office to screen the applications. And once the applications are screened, there are six, we can choose six of the screened applicants and call them in for interviews. We don't have to interview all of the six, but we may do that. If we don't want anyone in that group of six, we can give them back and ask for six additional ones. There's a form that we fill out where we have to rate each of the persons that we interview. I have had no problem in the selection of teachers here at Hillside. The executive director of instruction has always wanted the teachers who came to Hillside to be people whom I felt would fit in and suit our needs.
So you do take a lot of pains in selecting those out of the six. You were very selective of the ones because of your situation here.
Very much so. And then once I select them, if it's a time when teachers are available, I let the chairmen of the department sit with me and an assistant principal during the interview.
Are your recommendations usually adhered to or followed?
I've never had one since coming to Durham City that I submitted that was not accepted by the board.
Okay. Curriculum and instruction.
Once again, that proposes no problem because I think the General Assembly made it very clear that there was a standard course of study for the state of North Carolina. If you look here on my desk right now, what I have now is that teachers must pass into me. They have 10 days into this second semester. Mm-hmm. They must present a chart to me with the months of February, March, April, and May on it. And they have to go in. We have a scope and sequence chart. They have to go into that scope and sequence chart and let me know what outcomes that they have not already covered this school year, and they must tell me what month they are going to cover them in this for the rest of the school year. This will be given to my assistant principals and myself, and when we go into the classroom for observations, if you are not within that sequence in the month that you told us, then we need to sit down and talk. Mm-hmm. So from the curriculum standpoint, we have the basic course of study. We have a scope and sequence that has been put together by teachers last summer, along with our executive director of instruction. And the implementation is up to me as the principal. So I think we are right on target with that.
Mm-hmm. And you do see yourself as the instructional leader.
The day that principals are not instructional leaders within the school, I plan to retire.
Discipline.
Once again, that is something that you have to get and then go on from there. One cannot let discipline consume the entire school day, the entire 9 weeks, semester, or school year. And what has happened here at Hillside, we did have some discipline problems here when we first arrived, but this staff has gotten together, and we now don't have situations where kids are afraid to go in the restroom, or kids are going home afraid to walk from one classroom area to another. We have a specific discipline policy. Kids know what's going to happen to them if they're late for school. They know what's going to happen to them if they're on the hall without passes. They know what's going to happen to them if they're caught with matches or cigarette lighters in their pockets. All of that is in writing to them, and that is discussed with them by me the first 30 minutes that this student body is together in a school year. That is the first thing that they hear, because we begin discipline the moment that we walk out of the auditorium to begin our school year. The other part of that is that we have gone another step here at Hillside, and we have a student mediation program here that we started 2 years ago. And in that student mediation program, we have trained 28 students. And when there is a confrontation that does not require being sent home, or if it happened in the community overnight or on the weekend, mediation can occur by being referred by your classmates, a teacher, reverend from your church, or what have you. And we put the parties involved in a room with student mediators. Mm-hmm. And we have an adult who will sit on the outside of that room but does not enter into the mediation. And these student mediators who have been trained will present to me at the end of the mediation a report. If it is solved, then they are allowed to go on their classes without any administrative interference. If it is not solved, then the administrators get into it. And 97% of our cases that have gone to mediation since we started it 2 years ago have ended in non-administrative interference. This particular year, it has grown so that the mental health center with whom we began it, we now have an on-site person who is available to us now at all times, although we do share it now with the other high school who is trying to develop a program like ours at this time. So that's our discipline.
Very good. That's interesting. It gives the students more ownership into their own, taking responsibility for their own behavior.
I haven't had to deal with a boyfriend, girlfriend kind of a thing in 2 years.
Because that does get to be, with high schoolers, that's a real problem.
Yes,
it's
it is.
A real concern. Transportation.
Once again, I don't have a problem with that either, because we only have four buses. Hillside is situated in a neighborhood-like situation, and it only takes four buses to transport our kids. The way we handle that, however, is that I have a person, and it is a male in this case, assigned to each bus, and in the afternoons, that person is at that bus to make sure they get on, and we send those buses on.
That's really nice. Utilization of funds.
Well, it depends upon where the funds are coming, and in Durham, we get several kinds of funds. If they are local funds, we usually have to deal with the supervisor of whatever particular area in which you want to spend the funds. Science, for instance, I get a mathematics allotment and I get a general science allotment. And what I do for those local situations is that I give the allotment to the department chairperson. People in that department must submit the purchase order to the department chairman. And if the department chairman says no, then y'all work it out in the department. If she or he says yes, it is then sent on to my media center. And the purchase orders are typed by the media coordinators. The reason for that is, and their job is, that if they get the same order from English, math, science, and social studies, then they cut out three of them if they can figure out a way that all four of these groups can use that material. And we've been able to make our monies go further by having that kind of screening. Then when it gets to me, I sign so that it can be ordered.
Cafeteria management.
That's something that we all share in. The three assistant principals, during the lunchtime, we make sure that we are roving. And right now I have it set up where when there are classes in one whole section of our building, there are none in the other. So that gives us a small area that we have to handle. Teachers are on duty in the cafeteria in times of 20 minutes. A teacher has 55 minutes for lunch. The teacher either gives us the first 20 minutes of that lunch period or the last 20 minutes of that lunch period on cafeteria duty. And then one of we principals are still moving through there. Then, since each teacher has a 55-minute planning period, we don't feel like we're asking too much to take 20 minutes of the 55-minute lunch period to ask them to help us supervise. Mm-hmm. Now, we not only have the teachers in the cafeteria, but they are spread throughout the building for the first or last 20 minutes. Everybody, including the principal, serves duty at this school.
But the cafeteria, you have a cafeteria manager. Is this centrally controlled? She under the child nutrition department. You really don't have anything to do with the actual funds or selecting the cafeteria manager, do you?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
I just happen to have one that has been here with me, but when it's time to hire a new manager for that cafeteria, I'm going to be involved. Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to hire the person, but I'm going to have some input in terms of the interview process and being able to say whether or not I think the person will suit our needs. I'm not silly enough to say that I will make the final selection because the law states that the principal only can recommend, but certainly I would be allowed to participate in that recommendation process.
Mm-hmm. You seem to feel strongly about that. Do you feel that this should be the administrator's role to select people that he or she has to supervise?
I have to definitely agree with that. The other part of it is that when it comes down to the nth degree, a person at central office is not responsible for people in that building. Now, I don't bother the person who coordinates nutrition. I think it's all right for her to supervise those people in terms of ordering food and developing their work schedule and that kind of a thing. But I think I should have something to say about when the lines open, when they close. I think they are the experts. They ought to know what kind of food they ought to have and what portions. But when it comes down to practical kinds of things, then I want some kind of control. And fortunately, I have that kind of relationship with Mrs. Lawson, who works our program. We feel so good about being involved that last year, our sales in the cafeteria showed a 300% increase.
Oh.
And we are the top money-making cafeteria in the system. And the system made enough money last year that Mrs. Lawson has been able to hire an assistant and is able to pay her from local funds, from monies generated from our nutritional program.
Do you have a lot of children on free lunch?
Not really. Do you know that we didn't qualify year before last with the 15% quota for people to get federal refunds for having taught in that kind of situation?
And you know, that's unbelievable. That kind of goes against what everybody believes about a typically black high school.
When you look at this school, in last school year we had about 208 seniors, and we generated $1.8 million in scholarships for that size. The other day I got my report back from the state of North Carolina, and it 100% of the students who enrolled in college from Hillside had met the state guidelines for entrance. See, these are things that we don't ever see in the newspaper about Hillside High School. Also, and the state average, if I remember correctly, for all students who enter a state school, something like 84% of them had garnered all of the requirements to enter. And I look at that, and we had 80-something percent of all of the students who even applied to school went to school from Hillside.
Oh. And what percent of the class applied to college? Remember?
You know, I don't remember exactly what that figure was, but the raw number was 148 out of 208 actually applied.
That's remarkable. That is remarkable. Well, I'm kind of getting off of a little bit, but do you think that your having such a large number of blacks, I mean totally black, do you think having the 70% of black teachers has anything to do with the success of the children?
Would you give me just a moment before I answer that question?
Mr. Hicks has 10 teachers out today. He's subbing in one of the classes. He had to run back to give a quiz.
Yes. I'm going to give you an answer to that question about the 70% black teachers probably being a strong force towards realizing what we need to. I'm going to have to say that it's good to have that kind of ratio in the situation that we have, but it is not necessary for that to exist in order for success to occur. And the reason I gotta say that is, you must remember, I've been principal of two fully integrated schools. Mm-hmm. When I left Parker Junior High School down in Rocky Mount, I had a staff that was about 65% white, 45% black, and we were at or above the state level in terms of test scores every year that I was there. I left there and went to a junior high school in Hillsborough where we were 77% white in terms of teachers and 23% black, and we had the same kind of thing occurring. We were a center for English teacher of excellence and that kind of a thing. I think the key, however, is having people who are sensitive to the needs of students. And if you can get any kind of combination, regardless of the color of the skin, who will be sensitive to the needs of that child, you can get the job done. It just means that we're in a situation here where we are 70% black, and I think we are in a position to get the job done with that kind of a ratio.
In your other two schools, what was the ratio of black students?
Just opposite of what it is here at Hillside. There, most of the time there were about 30 to 33% black in one situation and about 40 to 45% in another situation.
All right. I noticed one thing that's a little bit different too. When you talk about discipline, it does not seem to be a real big problem here. And when I talked to the principals of 64, they didn't have a discipline problem. And they said it was because of the strong teachers that they had. And I'm just wondering if this is the reason that it really is not a big problem here.
Strong teachers and teachers who are willing to cooperate. See, discipline just oozes from one door to the next, from one hallway to the next. And our teachers here at Hillside, they don't mind telling you to stop that if they don't teach you. Mm-hmm. And when what had happened in a lot of schools is the feeling that if I don't teach you, I'm not going to say anything to you. You aren't mine. Well, when we became a staff here, that is one of the things that I asked this faculty to do, and that was for us to cooperate, and that any success that we had, everybody would always know that it would be they who were the ones who made it come to fruition.
Yeah. Community relations. How does Hillside relate to the community?
Well, if you will see here, when I came here a few years ago, we were playing all of our basketball games down here in our little gymnasium.
Mm-hmm.
We went to North Carolina Central to talk with Chris Fisher, the director of athletics, and we have only played one home basketball game in our gym in 3 years. Central opened up their facility to us,
mm-hmm.
and without any, they don't charge us anything for coming over there. We have had kids who have gone to Central to sit in on their geometry classes. We get a chance to walk over and see all of their art displays, their drama presentations. We can walk over during the day. That's the college community.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the community here, we have a Hillside Family Day that is coordinated by one of my assistant principals, and we do that the Saturday before school opens every year, and that has gone tremendously well. We usually get 200-300 parents in here, have a workshop, have a big picnic down on our football field, and make a good half day of it. If you want to talk about the business community, 2 years ago Galaxo gave me $15,000 to do a project on the SAT. We took 55 kids through an SAT program from August to the last week in October, and they took the test the first week in November. 33 of those people were upperclassmen, and the others were underclassmen. We saw 150 to 200 points of increase SAT scores on the upperclassmen that took that test, and the kids who were sophomores, we saw a tremendous job that they had done on the pre-SAT. That's the kind of support that we get from the business community. So I'm very pleased with. I must also mention that we have a mentors program here that is run by Mr. Lee. And just yesterday, I got a letter from IBM indicating that they were giving Mr. Lee $500 on behalf of one of their volunteers who acts as a role model.
All right.
And I must also mention that what we ask these role models to do is not to take them to lunch. We don't want them taking them to ball games. We want them to come in here when they have time to talk with them about their jobs, how they make money, and then take them on their jobs and let them spend an hour or 2 hours a week or every 2 weeks or a month to show them an environment in which one can make money and not be afraid of the police coming and arresting you for making the money. Mm-hmm. And that's the objective of this mentor program that we have.
How many students do you have enrolled in that program?
We have 40.
Oh, good. Very good. How much administrative power and control do you think you have over your school site and your responsibilities?
All that I need to get the job done. And to me, power and control is it's not a primary thing with me. For instance, we talked about department chairpersons being allowed to say how money is eventually be spent in their department. I don't want that power. I want them to be happy about how they spent the money. When teachers go to their association meetings, teachers at Hillside, when they start arguing that they don't know where the monies went in their school, my teachers have to sit back and not play a role because they know where their monies went. Mm-hmm. And so I have enough power and control here to do what needs to be done for these children.
How did the desegregation of schools affect your role as a principal?
Well, it hadn't affected mine at all, and I know I may be in a minority. I have always felt that I do the best job that I can do in any situation, and I don't know of a whole lot of people who can do a better job than I can do in a situation. So it didn't make any difference with me, as it doesn't make any difference with me now whether I'm working for Durham City or Durham County in a merger. Our emphasis should be on children, and I have trained myself to work with other people to make sure that children benefit. And that's just my answer to desegregation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Did you find any difference in supervising black teachers and white teachers?
I don't let myself do that because you remember I said I try to stick with their evaluation instrument, and there are 8 functions on that instrument. Now, as long as you are carrying out those 8 functions, I don't care whether you like me or not, and I really don't care a whole lot about vice versa, and I'm not going to use a like or dislike for you when I get ready to do your evaluation. Now, there are some teachers in this building whom I know feel that I'm overly stern, that I may treat this person different from that person, but you won't find but a very small percentage who will say that they've been evaluated unfairly.
So you are fair.
I think I am.
Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy your job and why?
Well, first of all, I do enjoy my job. I can't think of anything else that I would want to be. I was a young coach in this state that had the world could have opened up for me in terms of jobs. I was fortunate enough to coach a kid named Phil Ford, who was a 76 Olympian and who's now an assistant basketball coach at the University of North Carolina. I had Buck Williams, who's now a big star in the NBA, was on my junior varsity squad. But that is the time that I got out of coaching and came into administration, because this is what I want to do. I love being around children. I've only missed three of any kind of activities here at Hillside in the 3 years I've been here. I've been to every basketball game, every football game, every choral concert, every drama presentation. I just love my job. And I've done this in anywhere that I've been. And I think there's a place for black males, those few of us who are not in prison now, there's a place for us to be in a positive way in America. And that's why I love my job. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What do you consider the major problem of your principalship?
Probably me.
Why would you say that?
Not anticipating things sometimes and allowing things that may cause progress not to occur. To give you an example, you know, site-based management is one of the prevalent ideas floating around now. And although you may think that you are allowing your staff to do this or do that, one of my objectives this year was to hold back and not speak out so quickly to give other people an opportunity to say and do things. So that's why I say I'm probably my biggest problem, but I hope I'm cognizant of that and am now trying to develop techniques so that I won't be my biggest enemy.
Mm-hmm. What do you consider most rewarding about your principalship?
You know, it's hard to say because when I get a letter like the other day that said we had two candidates who are finalists for the teacher scholarship at the end of the year, and I well know that once you become a finalist, because there's so few now, those two kids are going to get a scholarship. Then I felt so good when an athlete coach walks in here and said, we got a 70,000 scholarship for your athlete for 4 years. I feel good then. I feel good on days when we have our academic awards assembly and see those kids come up and get their trophies or awards for making the honor roll. So I just have so many joys in being principal that I can't pick out one. And I also, now, this is not a joy of my teaching position, but I'm adequately paid. Now, teachers, we got a ways to go. But as I look back over my 29-year career, my pay has followed my career. Mm-hmm. I made more when I left the classroom and became an assistant principal and a coach. I made more when I became a junior high school principal. I made more when I moved from a smaller junior high to a larger junior high. And I made more when I moved from the junior high to the high school. So it's rewarding. I enjoy that part of it because I feel fulfilled when I go home at night that I give a day's work and I'm paid well for it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Very good. Since there's so few black high school principals. If you knew of a black young woman or young man that aspired to be a high school principal, what advice would you give them?
Be certified and qualified, and make sure that you present yourself that way in all professional situations. What I do here at Hillside is that I have a young man on the staff who has his certification. Well, anytime that I have an assistant principal who is going to be out to a conference for 3 days or more, I hire a substitute and put him in this young man's classroom and bring him down here with me to perform those tasks, so that when he goes to an interview, he not only can say, I've had hands-on kinds of things. I just don't try to run this place by myself or with the other assistant principal when that occurs. So that's some advice I'm giving to him. And then the teachers, he or she gets to know what teachers say about him when he moves out of that role of the classroom and have to get on these kids walk in the hall or come in the cafeteria. But the best advice is to be certified and qualified, and know that you can't rap in the lounge. You can't use English that is colloquial and then expect people to be looking at you as a possible candidate for a principalship. Black males, I still think black males have to have a certain uniqueness about them in 1990 in order for a superintendent to place them in an integrated situation.
Do you think that there must be a sponsor, quote, someone of the other culture that affirms your ability? You know you can do it, and you know you do it very well, but to receive a position in an integrated situation, do you think you need a sponsor?
Well, let me just say this. There are so few blacks, male or females, in the positions where the selections are made that on the surface, one would have to say yes to your question. But I certainly would hope, that if I were to go for a job now, that it wouldn't take that, but just the collective observations of the group. But it would be hard not to feel that way, since so many of the persons making those decisions are of color, mm-hmm. Application.
Well, I've come to the end of my interview guide. If you have some words of wisdom, you can give them.
No, I don't have any words of wisdom. I just work today, and I'll take the weekend off and come back Monday and give it another shot.
Well, I can just tell from looking around, I can tell you're a sportsman. I can tell that a lot of people think highly of you with all these plaques on the wall, and you've had a lot of accomplishments. I can tell you like to read from the collection of books. And I can tell that you are sincere about what you do. Just the fact you're still going to the classroom to teach if you have to. You get in the trenches and you see that the job is done. I think the children here at Hillside are fortunate to have a principal like you. I've learned since I started these interviews that the 25-year span between the old administrators and you that are here working in this time, that you still have the same, I call it stuff in you, the same, and I've come to believe that an administrator is an administrator, has certain characteristics, and being black myself, I know that there is a place for us in education, and I think that strong administrators like you are what we need in our schools so that we can save our children, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, if I can be spoken of in the same breath with Dr. Lucas, who was here, when I'm gone away, I'll be happy. I saw him as a boy coming here to play basketball. I saw him as a young man as I came here coaching a team against his coaches, and I came here and followed him as principal. So we've had some good black male role models to those of us who wanted to be principals in any era. We've had some real good role models.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're missing. That's why I think, and when we deal with the teachers and how many we have, I think one of the things we're missing is the role models. And we've been fortunate, you know, because I graduated just a year after you did, and we had role models. And so I think that's what some of our children really do need. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Very well.